to any other fine, they can be fined again or any other. And that,
What line
that bothers me.
Mr. Chairman, what line is there?
That's line 9. Again, any person who violates any provision that gives the ORS number or any rule adopted thereunder shall incur in addition to any other penalty provided by law, a civil penalty in an amount of not more than $1,000 for each violation. Isn't that a bit of like double jeopardy, or am I misreading this?
Sorry, the bill I have is missing page 4.
I have an extra copy.
This is in the current law right now. It exists now.
I realize that. But I just want a clarification as you understand the law. Can you read in double jeopardy into that? A double penalty, I should say.
Well, we have assessed double penalties in that there's been instances, serious violations, where we have assessed the penalty and taken an action against the license, such as a suspension or a revocation. We've done both.
Okay, now how do you determine the difference between someone making an honest mistake and intent? I mean, I don't see anywhere in the present law where it says that you have to prove intent before the fine. I mean, what I don't want to see is someone getting raked for maybe the individual whose tax they're preparing didn't give them all the information. I'm not a tax preparer, so I can't. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just want to make certain that someone isn't making an honest mistake and all of a sudden the government comes down on their head.
Well, that's a fair question. I can reply as to what we've done in practice, and that the severe penalties that we have assessed has almost entirely been against people that have a history of problems. Our board hears every violation, every complaint. The licensee is given that opportunity even before a hearing, may take place, to present his side of the case. And our board, all being licensees themselves, fully recognize that they also make errors.
That what you're telling me is that you do attempt to determine an intent upon the individual who has made a violation, that you feel that the individual was more than just careless. But
Oh, yes.
I just wanted to clarify as to that part of it. Are there any further questions of this?
Thank you very much. The next, let me ask first of all, is there anyone here representing the public accountants? The reason I ask is that they have presented this committee with a large number of amendments, and I want to know if there's somebody here from the public accountant people to defend those amendments. We will not have a work session on this, and when this bill comes up again, if there's nobody here, if I understand the feeling here. Yes?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it's public accountants that
presented
this information.
It says in my
I'm looking for more.
Yeah. It says public accountants amendments. Am I reading this wrong?
Well,
who presented the amendments?
You may be reading it right. You are reading it right, but I don't think that's who presented the amendments. Is it public accountants?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the Board of Accountants?
No,
the public accountants.
Okay. I will attempt to get a hold of this group, because when this comes up again, we're not having a work session today. I get a feeling that there isn't a lot of sentiment in favor of these amendments on this committee. I may be reading it wrong.
Would you like to reconsider and have a work session today, Mr. Chairman?
No, I think it's being fair. But if anybody knows the public accountant folks,
I've got a lot of them.
Which exact ones are they?
This one says Public Accountant Amendments LC 216, Hannah Gross by staff 217.
I think amendments on page 2.
Oh, okay.
Okay, Merlin Holyham.
My name is Merlin Pulliam, and I'm here today in the capacity of Government Relations Committee Chairman for the Association of Tax Consultants. And I can be rather brief. I didn't prepare... Thank you. I didn't prepare anything in writing this time. I would like to apologize to this committee because I incorrectly addressed the written testimony I gave to you day before yesterday. Another committee had heard several other bills last week that were of interest to our group, and I thought this business was the same committee. I apologize.
We went through that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Like I say, the bills that they testified on in that other committee would have gotten the same treatment in this committee.
I appreciate that comment, Representative Campbell. Since Tuesday, I have met with the Mid-Willamette chapter of our organization and this noon with the Salem chapter, and I've talked to the state president and a number of other people, and I wanted to reflect the general response that is occurring just from that kind of a sampling on these amendments. And the first thing I would like to say is that our group, I'm sure, basically supports the bill as it was originally prepared by the interim committee, with the including the changes that they considered, with the exception of the tax planning provision. And we concur generally with the state board that's probably a broader issue than was recognized at the time, and we feel it would be wise to delete that and consider it as a matter in its own right. And we would also lump the corporation and partnership amendment items in that same general package, in that there are many implications, I think, that were not immediately recognized if this bill were to be passed with those amendments exactly as proposed. Elmer's testimony, Elmer Blundell's testimony, reflects pretty much many of the responses that I have gotten. Many of the practitioners do not now prepare corporate or partnership returns. They don't want to prepare those returns. And the preparers, looking toward the consultant level of licensing, many of them are not interested in that area of tax work. They don't look forward to being required, regardless of that, to being competent in the area of corporate and partnership returns before they can get that consultant license, because that's the license that permits them to conduct their own public business. So just in a sort of a summarized manner, we, after hearing Elna Blundell's testimony a few minutes ago, we generally would support her position and would strongly suggest that these items be dealt with on their own merits. If there is a problem out there, we don't see that there is a great problem. We also recognize that there may be some work going on that's somewhat questionable, but we don't see any overwhelming problem out there, and if it isn't broke, we don't think it ought to be fixed, and if it is broke, it ought to be fixed appropriately. And the implications are, I think, a great deal more widespread than was initially recognized. So we would basically support the position that Eleanor Blundell's testimony outlined. If there are any questions, I'd be glad to...
Are there any questions to this witness? There don't seem to be. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2093? Rob Douglas, you want to come up and introduce yourself to the tape?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rob Douglas, here today representing the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. The Society of Certified Public Accountants supports the continuation of the Board of Tax Service Examiners and would concur with their recommendation that tax planning be deleted from this bill. And in addition, we would oppose the amendments proposed by OAPA, which would require testing on the matters just mentioned, corporation, fiduciary, gift and inheritance tax.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Campbell.
What is OAPA?
I believe OAPA is the Oregon Association of Public Accountants.
Now, aren't the public accountants under the same... We went through this last time, didn't we? PAs and CPAs.
Oh, no.
Bring me up to date. Give me the list of characters.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Campbell, certified public accountants and public accountants are regulated by the State Board of Accountants.
But OAPA is then an organization outside of the regulation process.
That is incorrect. They represent the public accountants who are represented or who are regulated by the Board of Accountants, as opposed to certified public accountants.
Is that a lobby then?
That is a state association of public accountants. I do believe they have a lobby.
Is there any further questions?
I've got a question.
Thank you for explaining it.
Rob, I get from this, and I conclude that the phrase tax planning is a very difficult one to really describe in any professional way. I mean, people can be a CPA and still be a tax planner, or be a PA and still be a tax planner. Am I correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct, or they could not be either and be a tax planner, and we would concur with the board in saying that is a difficult phrase to define at this time. And probably should not be included on that exam.
You understand this is not a work session, then, so okay.
Mr. Chairman, we're in the middle of planning taxes, or I guess we could be declared tax planners to some extent.
Well, state planning.
Yeah.
Well, we won't take it off there because I don't want to be fined $1,000.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Otto.
You mentioned that we were going to have another work session on this. I guess my question is, why?
Well, we could have a work session if it's a pleasure of this committee.
It's a pleasure.
And the reason I was going to hold off on it is the individuals who put forth a great number of amendments don't seem to be here today. But then again, they were notified of this hearing a possible work session. Now, if the committee wants to act upon this bill, then we'll go into work session.
Mr. Chairman, I'd request that the chair recognize this is a work session. Let us proceed with the bill.
I will recognize it. Mm-hmm. The work session. Okay, we will go into a work session on this bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Otto.
I'd move that we adopt the amendments prepared by the Tax Service Examiners dated 2/15/83, and they were hand engrossed by our staff on 2/17/83.
Representative Otto moves the amendment proposed by the Tax Service Examiners, amendments 2/15/83, hand engrossed by staff 2/17/83. The amendment on page 2, line 26, deletes the phrase and include tax planning. Is there any further discussion on the motion to amend? If there is no discussion, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Gilmore.
Aye.
Otto.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
DeBrack.
Aye.
DeJohn.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Robert.
Aye. Okay, the bill stands amended.
Mr. Chairman, I've moved House Bill 2093 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Otto moves that House Bill 2093 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Is there any further discussion? Call roll, please.
Aye.
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 Gilmore.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Otto.
Aye.
Robert.
Aye. Representative Gilmore, would you like to carry this bill on the floor?
Sure.
Thank you very much. Representative Gilmore will carry the bill.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
in deference to Representative Gilmore, it passed unanimously. Would you want it on the unanimous consent calendar?
Might as well.
We'll put it on the consent calendar.
Controversial.
House Bill 2093 is passed to the floor with a due pass on the consent calendar. That takes care of that. House Bill 2105, Austin Collins.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Austin Collins, and Mr. Chairman, I was just writing you a note. I spoke to this bill the last hearing on it, and since that time I have done a little more study on it, and I have learned that chapter OIS, chapter 757, was overhauled quite extensively in the 1979 session, and it was... That's before my participation here, and I discovered that several things happened to that that doesn't please me much, maybe even displeases me some, in that it included people's utility districts and electric co-ops organized under the electric ERA, rural electric, rural electric, authority, whatever it was. It was passed in 1935, I believe. And I would request the indulgence of the committee to put this over to another hearing and give some of us a chance to prepare some amendments to offer to you.
Okay. Is there any questions of Mr. Collins?
Mr.
Representative Skinner.
Austin, what would the nature of the amendments be?
Well, just for an example, it's right here before us in the engrossed bill 2105 in line 6. It says, the Department of Commerce, after hearing upon complaint by a licensee, a public utility, and note, or a people's utility district, that rates and so on, I would propose at this time that this bill be amended by deleting reference to a people's utility district. But that would only partially solve the problems with Chapter 757 at all.
How about any other amendments, Austin?
I don't know how to handle this, but on line 12, near the end of that line, it says, as the director considers equitable, in respect to people's utility districts and electric co-ops, that might not be constitutional in light of Article 11D, which is that constitutional amendment was placed in the Constitution in 1932 by initiative referendum. And I'm not at all sure that this body here is privileged or licensed to act without more considered
Austin
study.
Austin, Kathleen, I'm going to interrupt for it. Kathleen Buffay from Legislative Council is here. I'd like to have her come up and sit with you if it's all right, because...
Well, that's fine.
Her reason for being here is to answer some of your concerns and at the same time the concerns of members of the committee. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kathleen.
No, I'm not passed today. I owe you a speech tonight.
Kathleen, would you identify yourself for us, please?
Mr. Chairman, Kathleen Buffet, Office of Legislative Counsel. I'm caught a little bit by surprise at what you're going to get's a horseback opinion. But I'm not sure that I recognize the application, for example, of Article 11D to this question. 11D is the constitutional amendment that was adopted in 1932 that put the state in the business of acquiring potentially water source sites and the development of water power. If you'll remember, the Bonneville Power Administration came into being a couple of years later, and they started to stack some mud out there in the Columbia called Bonneville Dam. And this constitutional amendment has been on the books, but inoperative since then. People's utility districts are created in pursuant to a different kind of thing, so I'm not sure that I can follow the reasoning that Mr. Collins offers as his reasoning on this thing. The only one I did notice, though, in the same line that he is noting, it talks about the public utility commissioner or the director of commerce making a finding, but when it comes to who could make the order about the payment of costs, only the director can. The public utility commissioner got lost in the shuffle by the time you reach line 12, and I don't know if that's something I'm not following in the bill or was an accident of the drafting. So it's a it's the proposal's a little bit unique in this respect, and that is there are quite a lot of places, including courts, that when you lose, you pay the court costs or you pay the administrative hearing costs when you lose, but not when you prevail. This one seems to allow the possibility that you prevail and you still pay, which I don't know that that's necessarily immediately. You can say, oh my, you know, that's a becomes a constitutionally constitutional issue, but it may be perhaps more a unique suggestion, and I have not had the opportunity to do any research to look at any of questions of whether or not there's a difficulty in allocating costs among parties in that way.
Kathleen, I don't know that we are aware of who the drafter of this was also either, but as I've looked at this, I have taken the word director to mean both the public utility commissioner and the director of the Department of Commerce, and I wonder if any of the other committee members have any other opinions about what that means. And I think you're right in pointing out that we should specify the appropriate person, whether it's the director or the commissioner.
Yeah, you notice the next line, it does say commissioner or director.
Yes, would you come forward, please, Colin? Yeah, identify yourself for the record, please.
No.
No. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Paula Walnez, Executive Assistant to the Director of the Department of Commerce. When this bill was drafted, it was to address the needs of the Department of Commerce because we do not have funding to conduct hearings on this. We invited the Public Utility Commissioner to participate if he felt the need, and he said no, he specifically wanted to be left out of it. Original draft did include the Public Utility Commissioner. He asked us to delete it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Otto.
Kathleen, would require a lot of work at this point in time to amend the bill to exclude the PUC Commissioner?
I don't know. The PUC Commissioner is already not included in the fixing of costs. The other part of it, the Public Utility Commissioner, that rates, terms, or conditions, you need your Public Utility Commissioner for that
okay.
part of it.
All right. I guess then the question would be, would it be difficult to just have it apply to the Director of Commerce?
Yeah. What I'd be inclined to do, I think, and it's cosmetic, is to take the content of lines 11 and 12 and move them down and put them at the end, so that it would something to the effect of when the order is issued by the Director of Commerce, the order shall also provide, and that would, I think, make the distinction not look like an oversight, which it does a little bit now.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's in cosmetic. Rereading it, it appears that that's what they intended to say and didn't quite get there.
Mr. Chairman, Legislative Council drafted this for us, and I agree that that would be an improvement.
Paula, will you follow up on that and provide us with the appropriate change then?
I'm glad to.
Austin?
Mr. Chairman, we're in what, a hearing or a work session?
We're still in a hearing.
In a hearing. Right. And would you want to go to a work session on it today?
Well, I don't think we know yet. Mr. Collins requested that we set it over until he has a chance to do some work, and I think we need to get through that issue before we decide whether or not we want to go into a work session. The problem that I think Kathleen and Paula identified is more technical than anything else and doesn't really address the issue. I think Mr. Collins is addressing the heart of the issue, and that's whether anybody should be able to regulate the public utilities and co-ops.
That is a correct statement, Mr. Chairman.
What? Chairman, I was just wondering if we could amend this bill to include them under the PUC.
Mr. Chairman.
No. I'm sorry, I get your switch.
It's a good thing you laughed. That's how you decide.
All right, Mr. Collins, would you restate your concerns again and see if we can address them a little bit?
Yes. My concern goes back to an action that was taken in 1979 and apparently was overlooked, or maybe it was just a malicious act at that time, but it needs to be rectified now, and it can be done by amending this bill, and it would take a qualified person maybe 3 or 4 hours, and I'd have to find someone to contribute some time, to donate some time, or lean on the legislative council. And I would be most pleased if the committee would delay the action on this and give me that opportunity. Now, I would like to say further that there's probably millions of dollars of the little people's money involved here, and this is a unique opportunity to.
Mr. Chairman,
I
was involved in the 1979 legislation, and I really don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it was a nice piece of legislation, and it came about because the public utility districts were abusing their authority. They were charging exorbitant rates for joint use of a pole, and involved the Lincoln County PUD.
Absolutely,
charging a real high rate for attachment of the cable for cable TV. And Austin, I'm going to tell you where I'm coming from, and you can lobby me if you want. But right now, I guess I'll make the old trite statement that there's no such thing as a free lunch. And if we don't pass this piece of legislation, then the taxpayers as a whole of the state of Oregon are going to be paying. And why shouldn't things be pretty much self-supporting? And this is a method whereby the Department of Commerce can request payment for their service. And we do it with other agencies and all, and other groups. Now, why should the PUDs be exempt? That's the question, I think.
Mr. Chairman, may I reply?
Certainly.
Thank you. Representative Otto, I have no quarrel with you on the concept of no free lunch. And I do agree that, and these hands can testify, that I've carried my weight all my life, and I expect most people to carry as much as they're able to. But the issue of the Tillamook County PUD charging whoever it was an excessive amount. Lincoln County PUD charging some entity a small amount is just a small item relative to the overall on this. And my knowledge, personal knowledge of the history of this problem here goes back to when I was still in grade school, when the Consolidated Edison people in central United States around the Chicago were called to task by some entity of the federal agency, and Sam Hensel was indicted and spent some time in prison. Now then, the wheels turn once more, and we have made some mistakes. The tires got loose and so on, and then the PUDs were aping our associates, the privates, and we're making some mistakes too. Now it's not at all inappropriate that we review this, and since this bill's been filed, and it's open to amendment, we should look at the situation in a little wider perspective. That I could go on for hours and hours and hours about my dad buying poles and wire and giving it to PP&L, the main corporation, and taking a whipping on that in the 1920s, but I don't think that would be germane to this discussion.
Representative Zajon.
Yes, Paula, could I back up and get to the heart of why the bill's before us? I'm sorry that there's not enough law in this bill to give me perspective of what we're trying to do here. The people that are going to be involved in the hearing are who?
These would be People's Utilities Districts and primarily cable companies who want to make use of their poles to instead of erecting their own poles. And these hearings would take place only if they were unable to arrive at a meeting of the minds on the amounts they would be charged. So the hearing would be in the form of an arbitration proceeding by the director.
Okay. What's escaping me, and it's just my lack of understanding apparently of the law, is why the Commerce is doing this rather than the PUC.
That's the way the law was written at the last, when was it, the last legislative session. The People's Utilities Districts were assigned to the Department of Commerce rather than a Public Utility Commissioner, and I was not present and have no way of knowing whether that was at their, by design, their request, or whether that was what the legislature.